Hello, I'm Mariëtte Snyman. Welcome to Calm, Clear and Helpful, a weekly podcast series on taking good care of yourself and others. Introducing you to a wide range of wellness professionals ready to inform and inspire. Today's topic is Silenced by Depression, Anxiety or Trauma, the Power of Your Voice. My guest is Karen de Kock, arts therapist, corporate group facilitator, clinical supervisor, and part-time lecturer from Centurion. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you, Mariëtte, and thank you for this opportunity to speak to your listeners about something that I'm very passionate about.
I'm looking forward to hearing what you're going to say. And to our listeners, thanks for listening in. During our conversation, Karen will mention techniques we can use as daily practices to improve the quality of our lives, and then it will be fun question time. Karen, sound has played an essential role in your life since childhood. Could you say a little more?
My experience of sound started with the birth of my sister, Andrea. Now, just to mention that when I say sound, I will be using sound and music interchangeably because, sound came first. So my sister was born on my first birthday. It was the mid-60s. She was born 2 months premature. And in the 60s, we didn't have the technology yet to look at brain development and the fetus development as we have today. And so she was born 2 months prematurely. And she was about 3 months old when they diagnosed her with Rubinstein-Tabi syndrome, which is a developmental diagnosis, which also includes that her brain wasn't fully developed. So what they in those days called intellectual disability. So they told my parents that she would never walk or talk and that she would not grow older than 12 years. And so it is on a spectrum. And so we also now, years later, also know that she is also on the autism spectrum, but we didn't know it then. And so I was 1 year old when she was born. So we spent a lot of our time together. We slept in the same room. Our cots were next to each other. And so what she taught me from a very young age was not to think her, but to feel her. And I'm very grateful for her that she's one of my greatest teachers. So when I went to kindergarten, I was about 3. Typically what children do at that age is they learn through song and rhyme. So we learn the days of the week and the colors of the rainbow and the animals on the farm through song and rhyme. And just like children typically do at that age, I went home and I was on auto repeat. And I was just repeating. And she couldn't escape. She was either sitting in a high chair or she was in a pram or on a chair. And so she sat and she was my captive audience. And through all the repetition of these songs and rhymes, which were initially in Afrikaans, which is our mother tongue, she started making those sounds and she started forming words. And she actually started singing full words to a song before she could talk. And of course, for me, that was wonderful because she was my audience and I could take words out and she would fill in the words. So I learned from a very young age, around 3, how to use sound and music for relationship and to communicate. So that is where my first experience of the essential role of sound was formed.
And it plays such a huge role in your life. I was wondering if you could give us an overview of your career.
Oh, I'd love to do that. So because of my experiences with her with sound and singing, I went, I sang in choirs in primary school and in high school, experiencing that the effect of sound on my body, of singing. I was in an art, ballet, and music school from standard six to matric, and we had four periods of music a day. And so when I wrote matric, I was quite saturated. And I went to study law at the University of Stellenbosch. My mother knew. You know, my mother was an amazing woman. She never said, no, you know, you need to study music. She allowed me to go and do law for 2 years, but there was this missing in my life. And so after 2 years, I switched over to Abimas, singing in performance. So I'm a classically trained singer, and I'm very grateful for that because it really allowed me to use my body as an instrument, to use my voice for amplification and for muting and all of that. And so after my BMAS in classical singing, I went to do an honors in ethnomusicology at the University of Cape Town. And there my whole world changed because I was then introduced to the African and other indigenous ways of music for healing and traditional practices and how traditional societies use the voice and sound and music for healing. I then got married and I had children and we moved to Kenya where I had a very profound encounter with Maasai at Ngong Hills. One Sunday afternoon, we went for a walk up the hills and I heard this sound that really touched my entire being. It was a visceral encounter and I didn't know what it was. I couldn't understand it, but it had an effect on my body. And when we walked down, I asked the security guard, what was that that I'd heard? And he said it was a Maasai man that was singing, communing with ancestors. I then, when we came back to South Africa, I studied anthropology and psychology through UNISA, not knowing that I would step into a clinical master's in music therapy the following year. So I finished 2 years of a clinical master's in music therapy. And then my first job as a music therapist was at an NPO for profound disability, people with severe to profound cognitive disability and physical disability. And even though my sister had a cognitive disability, she never had a physical disability. And so I was introduced to people with profound cerebral palsy. Some of them could only move a finger or their eyes, but they could make sounds. And I was really interested in how I, as a music therapist, could work with that ability of making sound in a body that is otherwise so immovable. And so I started a vocal ensemble with 10 persons with profound cognitive and physical disability who could make sounds. And I initially wanted to gauge their range of sounds. So I recorded each person's range in order so that each person could participate in this vocal ensemble. And so I created songs with each person's range of sounds. And again, going back to my sister who taught me not to think people, but to feel people, in this space with the vocal ensemble, I mostly did my work with my eyes closed because I did not want to be influenced with what I was seeing. I needed to go into the feeling of each person's body. Even though they were severely paralyzed, there was still movement happening inside their bodies. And I worked with this vocal ensemble for 15 years, and it was a really profound space of not focusing on the disability, but focusing on the ability. And so creating movement internally for each person and for each person participating and also for the group as a collective. And so informed by that experience of the effect of sound on the body for movement of emotions, I started at my first private mental health care hospital in 2009. And then worked at a few others, but this specific hospital I've been at for 15 years and I work with groups, because of the effect that I experienced with the vocal ensemble and the movement of emotions. And so that also moved into the corporate space of working with groups. And I'm also a part-time lecturer at the University of Pretoria in the master's program, where I teach master students in music therapy how to use their voices therapeutically for themselves and also in their work with clients.
Sure. This is quite a story. And I must say, a lot of what you're talking about, I think, lies outside my range of experience, and I'm sure many of the listeners. For instance, that Maasai experience you had and the working with a vocal ensemble.
Yes, because that is not music that was familiar to me, but it was music that I could tap into and a part of. And it also contributed to my well-being as a healthcare professional, which is important.
Karen, you view the voice as essential to our being and well-being. Could you explain to us how you see this?
Yes, going back to our birth, we come into the world announcing ourselves through our voice. And so we come into this world through sound, announcing ourselves, clearing our lungs. And if that sound is missing, the professionals at the time, the healthcare professionals that are present at the time of our birth, know that something may be wrong. So if there is not that sound, then it is an indication that something may be amiss. So there's all sorts of things happening to enable that sound to come from our bodies as a little being in the world. So we announce ourselves in this world through sound, and we spend the next 8 or 9 months communicating our needs through sound, not words. And through communicating our needs through sound, we cry when we are hungry, we cry when we are wet, we cry when we are in pain, we cry when we are tired, but not all of the crying is the same. And so the primary caregiver can tap into that quality of the crying, understand the needs of the baby. So from that very first stage of our life, we tap into our voice to communicate and express our needs and to have those needs being met. The voice carries intention. My voice can heal, but my voice can also destroy. And so I have that choice of how I want to use my voice. So when the baby starts acquiring language, that actually takes away from the capacity of communicating our needs. Because what do we do as we grow up? Somebody asks us, how do you feel? And you say, I am fine, even though you are not fine. But you're using a word to mask what you are actually feeling. But if I ask you, Mariette, how do you feel today? And you say, I have an idea of how you feel, even though you didn't use the word. So that is why the voice and how we use our voices is so essential to our being and our well-being. Because our voice can express all the different feelings that we are feeling at any given moment.
Karen, your work connects arts therapy with mental health. How would you describe the effects of depression, anxiety, and trauma?
Okay, so it's important to just first explain what the arts therapies are. We are registered at the HPCSA under arts therapy, and that is the umbrella for art therapy, drama therapy, movement and dance therapy, and music therapy. So we are registered as arts therapists, but we each qualify in a modality. So I qualified with a clinical master's in music therapy. So music will always be what I enter a relationship with clients. So from the music, from the sound, I will get an idea of what a client feels, and then that may be moved into an art-making process, which may then elicit a story process and then can move into movement. So art therapists work with process. We are process work orientated. We are client orientated. And so the effectiveness of the arts therapies is that traditionally therapy used to be talk-based, cognition-based, and we know that not everybody has the vocabulary to talk about their feelings. They are not necessarily equipped with a language. And so the arts offer a projective screen for unconscious material to come to the surface, to give people the language through music and sound and art making and storytelling and movement to bring it into consciousness, to make them aware of what they might not necessarily be conscious of. So it's giving people a vocabulary other than words. So we work non-verbally initially, and through the non-verbal elements of the arts, we can go into the verbal. And that is very effective in mental health, because we work with high levels of depression, high levels of anxiety, and trauma. We are living in a traumatized society, and I think we all know that. So it is important to give people a space away from talk-based therapy, cognition-based therapy, a space to express, to become aware of what the body is holding. Because cognition-based therapies are not necessarily situated in the body. And we work with the body, what we call somatosensory experiences. So the body holds the score. And so for me, the voice holds the score. So the voice tells the story of somebody's experience. Depression silences people, anxiety strangles people, and trauma blocks people. In all these cases, the voice is implicated and people become silenced.
I'd like to go back to emotion. You've mentioned before that every emotion has a sound. Could you talk about that, please?
Yes. If you think about, what do we do when we're sad? When we were children and we were sad, we cried. When we were happy, we laughed. When we were angry, maybe we shouted. And when we were tired, we yawned. So the idea of emotion equaling sound equaling movement comes from Jonathan Goldman, who is a sound healing pioneer in the US. And he has this premise that if an emotion, which has a sound, moves out of your body, you stay healthy, because then that emotion doesn't accumulate. So for instance, what is the sound of anger and frustration? It is loud. It is not soft. And so if we make that sound, it could be a grunt. If you make it, it leaves your body. It doesn't get stuck and accumulates. And we know that expressing anger is not always acceptable. We, for instance, cannot go around shouting at people. That is destructive. But if we can, in the moment that we're so angry, we're so frustrated, find a way of getting rid of that sound, maybe grabbing a pillow and shouting in the pillow, it means that that sound leaves the body. So, for instance, what is the sound of happiness? Happiness is laughter. But we know we can't always laugh because it's not always appropriate. For instance, at a funeral, there's often something funny, but you cannot laugh. And so what happens to your body when you try and keep a laugh inside? It starts shaking and you start snorting because it's a sound that wants to come out. So that is why I say every emotion has a sound, and that sound needs to leave your body. Otherwise, it goes and sits, and it accumulates and can really become destructive.
Karen, when we were talking before today's recording, you mentioned that we can use our voices to save our lives. Could you repeat that? I found that very interesting.
Yes, that is something that I often encounter with clients. When you ask somebody to sing, they will say, "Oh, I can't sing to save my life." And that is often a conditioned response, which probably dates back to an early experience of not making it into the choir as a child, where you actually feel, "Oh, I can't sing." It could also be somebody early on in your life when you sang, said, "Oh, you mustn't sing. You know, your voice is just for, it's not for singing, it's for talking." So often I hear that, and I often also in group work, when I ask people to make sounds, there's that initial fear of making a sound that is too loud. "Oh, I'm not a loud person." Or also the contrary, some people find it very hard to whisper because they were at an experience where somebody said, "What are you whispering? Are you skinnering?" So by making people aware that your voice can actually save your life in moments where you feel very dysregulated. For instance, you are extremely angry, you are extremely frustrated, and you are in danger of doing something to yourself or to somebody else. If you, in that moment, take a deep breath and sigh out, sighing out means something leaves your body. And also maybe in that moment, do a hum, which is a sound that doesn't leave the body, but really resonates within your whole body, that can calm your nervous system in that moment, which can save your life, because you may have a moment to pause and reflect and not do something to harm yourself or somebody else. So that would be, your voice can save your life by deactivating your nervous system. And then the contrary, your voice can also activate your nervous system if you are in a very dangerous situation where you have to use your voice to save your life. For instance, I have a lived experience of being in a dangerous environment where I was in danger of my car being hijacked by more people than I would have liked to be present. And in that moment, I felt frozen. I felt deactivated, but I screamed in that moment from my stomach, a very primal, loud scream, which activated my nervous system, which gave me the impetus to put my foot on the pedal and to get out of that situation. And I do believe that that scream increased my endorphins, increased my cortisol levels, and in that moment, I was able to leave the situation. So your voice can actually save your life. And it's important to understand that even though you say you are a person that is not very loud, be aware that you have that as a resource to be loud in a moment where you need to assert yourself. And the same when you say, "But I can't, you know, I can't whisper," or "I can't be soft," in a situation where you feel very activated, very dysregulated, then you can actually use your voice to calm yourself down and to save your life.
I find that very valuable information. Would you like to tell us more about the way you work with clients?
So as I said, because I'm a music therapist, I will always start with sound and music. Because we are offering clients other ways of expressing, not necessarily through words, I will never start by asking somebody, "So tell me, what is the problem? Tell me, why are you here? I am not interested in that." I will ask the client, "What would you be comfortable with? Would you be comfortable with me and you doing a vocal interaction? Or would you like to do a drumming improvisation where I play a drum, you play a drum, and we have a conversation? Or would the client be more comfortable experiencing a guided visualization with live instruments and singing in a non-ordinary state? It would very much depend on the client's initial needs. Through a vocal interaction, I get an idea because, as I said, your voice tells your story. And through a vocal interaction or a vocal improvisation, I can get a pretty clear idea of, is this person comfortable with making loud sounds? Is this person very much in a limited voice sound? And then we explore that. And people often say, when we do start with a vocal interaction, oh, I didn't know I can make such a loud sound. It was liberating. I feel as if something left my body. With a rhythm, a drumming interaction, very much gauging, is this person grounded? Is this person anxious? Because drumming can be activating and deactivating. And then with a guided visualization in a receptive state, you switch off the rational mind. You switch all that default thoughts, that perseveration of thoughts, and they go into the body. Because again, as I said earlier, we work with a body. We work with what is inside that I don't necessarily rationally can explain. So that would be with an individual, either vocal, either instrumental, or a guided visualization.
Would you like to talk about your group work as well and how you use it in corporates?
Yes. So if we think about an individual has to function in groups, whether that be a relationship with a significant other, in a family, in a work situation, we have to be able to function in groups. And so if we work from the individual, strengthening the individual, I find that group work in hospital with people with a mental health issue is for me the way to go, because there are psychologists and psychiatrists and social workers working with the individual. And so the group space becomes very important, because a mental health diagnosis can make people feel isolated. We still are dealing with a lot of stigmatization. So out in the world, people feel alone, isolated. I'm the only person feeling this. And so when we work in groups, when I work in groups, it is very valuable for that individual to be witnessed, to tell their story. And so what happens in the group is normalization. We are normalizing your feelings. They are not strange. They're not crazy. They're not abnormal. So in groups, as with a vocal ensemble so many years ago, each person's sound contributes to the group. And there's a connection. And now remember, neuroscience tells us that when you sing a song or you make a sound that you like, your serotonin levels are increased. So it's your feel-good hormone. You feel better. If you learn a new sound or a new song with new lyrics, new melody, you feel, I've achieved something. I've extended my repertoire of songs. And then in those cases, your dopamine levels are increased, which is the reward chemical. And then when you make sound together in groups, when you sing together in groups, you feel connected to people. And so the bonding chemical, which is oxytocin, is increased. So neurobiologically, by working in groups and making sounds in groups, there's a lot happening that makes you feel better. And so taking this from in-hospital into corporate, if there was resources, we could work with each individual in the corporate space. But there are no resources, financial resources, time resource to work with each individual. And again, as with the in-hospital space, working in corporate groups really strengthens the group because each individual within that group is getting a voice. And we know what happens in the corporate space. Some people feel silenced. Some people feel blocked. Some people feel anxious. And so by working with a voice and with music and songs, you actually give each person in that group an equal space to voice. And it becomes, you know, I see what happens in corporate. There's often a lot of emotions within teams that people have not expressed because they didn't feel safe, because it would be inappropriate. But if you create a safe space and everybody's equal and everybody gets a turn to voice, that actually strengthens the group and people become more aware of each other.
I must say, when I listen to you talking about group work, it sounds enticing.
I personally love group work because it feels like the healing or the restoration is on steroids because of that peer support, that peer acknowledgement, that peer witnessing. And so most of my groups happen in circles because it is not hierarchical and it demarcates a healing space.
A quick note on what I do. I'm a content entrepreneur creating podcasts and articles on living a happier and healthier life. By interviewing coaches, therapists, and other wellness experts from over the world. You'll find this content on my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, and it's there to help you find just the right helping professional when you need one. The section Up Close and Personal on my website offers you a glimpse of the person behind many of the experts I feature. If you're a wellness expert keen on getting more in-person or online clients or creating worldwide awareness of an issue close to your heart, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. You'll find more information under Services on my website. To each listener, no matter your age, occupation, or where you live, how about creating your very own personal audio recording with me as a one-of-a-kind gift to someone you deeply care for? In this private interview with me, you can express your love for your partner, leave a legacy to your children or grandchildren, honor your mum or dad or a mentor. The possibilities are endless. To find out more, just click on Gift Podcasts on my website. Now, back to my guest. Karen, you once said that the voice is a bridge in more ways than one. Could you explain?
Okay, on a physiological level, your voice or your vocal cords are located in your neck, and the function of your neck is the bridge between your head and the rest of your body. So physiologically, your voice is the bridge between your brain, your cognition in your head, and the rest of your body. So it becomes that mind-body space where the two, the cognition and the feeling, the emotion, gets linked, because if people are too cognitive, they get stuck in the brain, in the head, which can lead to things like insomnia, not being able to switch off, can lead to headaches, migraines. And then if people get stuck in feeling, it can lead to things like heart palpitations. The favorite is the stomach, with ulcers, irritable bowel syndrome, bloatedness, spastic colon, all of those things that are in the body, illnesses of the body. So the voice can become that bridge that connects between the head and the rest of the body. Also, the voice becomes the bridge between what I feel inside, all these emotions that I bridge out into the world, how I express myself into the world. And then when we sing together, as I've mentioned earlier, when we sing together in groups, we build bridges between people. We feel connected to people because we start breathing together. We start connecting our sounds together. And what we call, it synchronizes. We entrain with other people, which is connecting.
Could you discuss specific techniques we could use as daily practices to improve the quality of our lives?
Certainly. First of all, I would just like to say, sing as much as possible. Sing in the shower, sing in your car, sing in the kitchen when you're cooking, sing around the fire with family and friends, sing when you hear a song on the television or in a movie that you love. Sing, because for all the reasons that I've just said, of singing can increase your serotonin levels, it can increase your dopamine levels, and it can increase your bonding chemical, which is oxytocin. So first of all, I would like to say, sing, first of all. Then toning, vocal toning is a technique of, again, we do this every day. You sigh, you moan, you cry. These are sort of natural vocal toning. But vocal toning is a practice of producing sustained vocal sounds, such as vowel or simple sounds, to create that healing vibrations in your body. For instance, a hum is a vocal tone. So, So if you see something nice, be aware of the emotion and say, make those sounds. If you're sitting in front of your computer all day and you're sitting in meetings and somebody activates your nervous system and you really want to shout but you can't, remember that sound, and when you take a break, go and make that sound. Make that sound so it's out of your body. If you, in your daily encounter, experience something that was really sad, but you couldn't sigh or moan or cry in the moment, remember that situation and then do that sound, maybe when you're in your car, when you're away from the situation. If you're in a situation where you want to laugh, really laugh. Be aware of the laugh and the effects on your body. Have a belly laugh. Have a throat laugh. Have a solar plexus laugh. Have a head laugh. And laugh that sound into different parts of your body. Just going back to vocal toning, you are able, as I said in the beginning, that your voice carries intention. So if you feel your heart is a little bit heavy today, you can sound into your heart by going, just closing your eyes and focusing on your heart and sending a sound like, So it's just carrying that intention to parts of your body that you feel need that sound. So the other thing that I would suggest to people, we have daily rituals. Sometimes we get up in the morning. An alarm clock woke us up. It's a very abrupt, sudden sound that calls you into action. And just take a moment of just breathing in, and sighing out and not going into the day in that dysregulated go, 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 go state. Just ground yourself, make a sound, breathe out, and then carry on with your day. The same on the other side. If you wake up and you think, I really don't want to face this day, I really want to stay in bed, you can activate your voice, yourself, your body, like we said, in that moment when you are having to do something really loud. But you can actually say to yourself, I can get through this. And just say something simple like that. Get up, feel that activation in your body, and then go through your day. But always remember at the end of the day to thank yourself for getting up and doing what you did.
Thank you, Karen. I'm looking forward to trying out these techniques of yours.
I hope they help.
Well, they sound like fun, and they sound so expressive.
Yes, they are meant to be fun. They are meant to be taking you back to that childlike innocence of just expressing yourself without boundaries, because that's what children do. Children express themselves. Remember, a child, if you have a big nose, will ask you, why is your nose so big? And it's fun because you don't have to take it seriously. And that's the whole point, is not to take, to go back to that childlike state. It's not childish. It is childlike. That time where you expressed yourself through sound and movement and imagery and all of that. It's meant to just help you to get back to that state.
And before I ask where listeners can contact you, I would just like to mention that you also have a private practice, right?
Yes, that's right. I have a practice, private practice here in Centurion.
So where can listeners contact you?
Listeners are welcome to email me at musictherapy@telkomsa.net. All small caps.
Thank you. And I will include that email address in the podcast notes.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Maria.
Karen, may I ask you a fun question?
Oh, please do.
We're going to the realm of the imagination, so you needn't be practical. If you could spend a month living in any remote region on Earth, where would you like to go?
Somewhere high up in a mountain where I am among the trees and I can hear the birds and I can walk to a little river and somewhere up in a mountain. Away from chainsaws. That's a dysregulating sound.
Yes, and I guess you'll be making beautiful sound wherever you are.
Oh, absolutely. I will be a competition for the birds.
Thank you, Karen, for opening my mind to this topic, to sound and our voices and what expressing ourselves can do for us. Thank you.
You are very welcome. Thank you for this invitation and thank you for your listeners.
Yes, to our listeners, it was so good of you to join us. And if you found this episode helpful, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes and for free podcasts and articles on how to live a happier and healthier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. The podcast series, Calm, Clear, and Helpful, is produced by me, with original music by Mark Marie Sneyman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.